So several times we've talked about the interactive process, and what we're talking about there is the employer and the employee sitting down and talking about how an accommodation could be made for a particular employee in a particular job. Here again, this is a case-by-case analysis under the ADA. So it just makes sense for the employer and employee to undergo this an interactive process. And that is a phrase that has some legal significance under 29 CFR section 1630.203. And what the regs say, that is the Code of Federal Regulations, to determine the appropriate reasonable accommodation, it may be necessary for the covered entity, that is the employer, to initiate an informal interactive process with the individual with a disability in need of accommodation. This process should identify the precise limitations resulting from the disability and potential reasonable accommodations that could overcome those limitations. That makes perfect sense that the employer and employee should at least talk about what their ideas might be about a reasonable accommodation. However, there are limitations on how far the employer has to go, and a reasonable accommodation is one that is not an undue hardship on the employer. Another loaded phrase there, undue hardship, and it's defined under 42 U.S.C. section 12111 sub 10. Starts off with a general definition. The term undue hardship means an action requiring significant difficulty or expense when considered in light of the factors set forth in subparagraph B. And subparagraph B is to come. So be thinking about that. The driver in the Stevenson case, is it an undue hardship on the employer to hire a driver to take the salesperson around? Think about the cases that, one case allowed for some time off and another case did not allow for some time off. Is that an undue hardship to the employer? And so the law sets out some factors to be considered in determining whether an accommodation would impose an undue hardship on a covered entity. Those factors include the nature and cost of the accommodation needed. Another factor is the overall financial resources of the facility or facilities involved in the provision of the reasonable accommodation, the number of persons employed at such facility, the effect on expenses and resources, or the impact otherwise of such accommodation upon the operation of the facility. And a third factor, the overall financial resources of the covered entity, the overall size of the business of a covered entity with respect to the number of its employees and the number and type and location of its facilities, and the type of operation or operations of the covered entity, including the composition, structure, and functions of the workforce of the entity, the geographic separateness, administrative or physical relationship of the facility or facilities in question. So a lot of verbiage there, but there again, it depends. How big is the employer? How much money does it have to spend on personnel? It's going to be a different question for Ford Motor Company and Pfizer Pharmaceutical than it is on the mom and pop or three guys in the garage whose business has grown to such an extent that it's covered by the ADA, but it certainly doesn't have the physical resources to accommodate, would be limited. Is it an undue hardship? Another factor that has to be taken into consideration is whether there is a, quote, direct threat. In other words, a significant risk to the health or safety of others or the person that cannot be limited or eliminated by the reasonable accommodation. Let's go back to our hypothetical of the iron worker. If we've got an iron worker who has become subject to dizzy spells, that person is required to work at a height, could be a direct threat to his or her own safety. He could fall and sustain serious injury or get killed. So that is a direct threat of harm. It is somewhat complicated to break down that direct threat. There's another statute that applies. 42 U.S.C. Section 12113, and it says that it may be a defense to a charge of discrimination under the ADA when qualification standards, tests, or selection criteria that screen out or tend to screen out or otherwise deny a job or benefit to an individual with a disability who has been shown. Direct threat is a defined term under the ADA. 42 U.S.C. Section 12111 sub 3. The term direct threat means a significant risk to the health or safety of others that cannot be eliminated by reasonable accommodation. Then the regs say 29 CFR Section 1630.2 sub R that a direct threat means a significant risk of substantial harm to the health or safety of the individual or others that cannot be eliminated or reduced by reasonable accommodation. And the determination that an individual poses a direct threat is based, once again, on the individualized assessment of the individual's present ability to safely perform the essential functions of the job. And this assessment shall be based on a reasonable medical judgment that relies on the most current medical knowledge and or the best available objective evidence. So it's not a matter of the employer saying, I think that you are a direct threat of danger to yourself or to somebody else. The employer, who is a layperson and not a medical person, can't just make a seat-of-the-pants determination that somebody is a direct threat. So this got to be based on medical information. And the factors that are considered are the duration of the risk, is it an ongoing problem, the nature and severity of the potential harm, the likelihood that the potential harm will occur, and the imminence of the potential threat and harm. As a qualification standard, direct threat may include a requirement that the individual shall not pose a direct threat to the health or safety of the individual or others in the workplace. In other words, the absence of direct threat can be a qualification standard for the job to determine whether a person can do the job, do the essential functions with or without reasonable accommodation. So direct threat is an important aspect of the ADA.